Here at Early Excellence, we specialise in early childhood education. We offer expert advice and guidance through training, consultancy and classroom design. With the Early Excellence podcast, we aim to inspire and support you as well as challenge your thinking. So if that's what you're looking for, you've come to the right place. Hello everybody, Andy Burt here. Welcome along to episode 106 of the Early Excellence podcast. In this week's episode, we're joined by my colleague at Early Excellence, Nova Robinson, who works on our curriculum team. She's one of our curriculum consultants. Now, before we get started with the podcast episode, I thought I'd just share with you a bit of exciting Early Excellence news. Nova, our guest for the podcast this week, is going to be heading out very soon for our Key Stage 1 Early Excellence Roadshow, and we'll be coming to a venue near you. She will be travelling around the country. She'll be delivering lots of training. She'll be also taking the Key Stage 1 interactive environment out on the road with her. So yeah, there's going to be lots for you to see and lots for you to find out about. The places will book up quickly, so it is well worth moving with this pretty quickly. If you want more information and also to book your place, you can go onto the Early Excellence website, and we'll also put some information in the links for you, so you can click on it straight from the podcast info. All right. So yeah, give your Key Stage 1 colleagues a nudge, because this is definitely not to be missed. Okay. All right. So that's our Early Excellence news. For this week then, let's move on to this week's episode. As I say, we're joined by Nova. And in this episode, we discuss the importance of using continuous provision in Key Stage 1. We talk about the importance of it, how children will learn from continuous provision, how you're supporting transition through it, and all sorts of different things. And we also give some key advice on how to get started with continuous provision in Key Stage 1. Okay, so lots to listen to, lots to get you thinking. Here you go. Here's my Early Excellence podcast chat with Nova Robinson. Welcome along to the podcast.
Hi, Andy. It's lovely to join you.
Hiya. We're going to be talking all about Key Stage 1, and specifically we're going to be talking about continuous provision. And certainly something I've noticed quite a bit, that either from travelling around from school to school or from the visitors that we've had to Early Excellence, I've noticed more and more conversations around continuous provision within Key Stage 1, people being interested in it. Presumably that's something that you've noticed as well as part of your role.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it may be prompted by COVID, post-COVID, but I think it's that growing recognition that schools are looking at what they've traditionally done, what they've traditionally offered, year one in particular, but also increasingly year two, and just started to think, this isn't working. You know, for whatever reason, this isn't right for the children that we've got, and it isn't developing the kinds of learners that we want, and really starting to think about. I had a lovely conversation with somebody the other day, and they were talking about, it was in light of behaviour, and often this comes up in terms of discussions about behaviour, and they were really talking about the behaviour that had happened that wasn't great and the things that were going wrong with a traditionally structured, more formal approach. And she said, I really needed to look at what it was the children were telling me. And that was such a lovely way of putting it, you know, and she completely changed her outlook and really thought about why, you know, what are the reasons, you know, why are they behaving like this? Why am I struggling to get through whole class, I don't know, English, for example? You know, what is it the children are telling me with their behaviour? And that was her real starting point for thinking, well, they're telling me they need to move, to role play, to do this, to talk, and all those other things that we know young children need.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And as you say, you know, particularly I think in the last 3 years or so since the pandemic, I think everybody working within schools have been really aware, acutely aware of the needs of the children. You know, that children coming into reception, for example, with real need in terms of speech, language, communication, self-help skills or lack of, you know, real need in terms of personal, social and emotional development. And of course, you know, not all of those children are going to achieve that good level of development. You know, we hope that they are. Of course we do. But realistically, not all children are. And I think we do need to be really aware of what are we doing for all of our children as they move through into Key Stage 1. But also, you know, when we think about that transition, the transition is often a, you know, a huge leap, isn't it? It's a massive divide. It's absolutely not really, you know, it's not,
it's
even
a complete
similar, is
shift,
it?
Isn't it?
Yeah. So no. we've really got to be careful, haven't we, I think.
Mm. It's that, isn't it? It's looking at these are the children we've got rather than this is the curriculum that we've got and this is the age of the child we've got, therefore we teach them in a different way. It's going back to let's look at our children and what they need.
Yes.
You know, what works best
yeah.
for them.
Yeah, definitely. And interestingly, you know, when people are talking a lot, as they are, about, you know, developing their own curriculum, you know, and having the reasons behind why we do things, you know, our curriculum is based on the needs of our children. Actually, that should give people the strength and the confidence to be able to say, well, actually, our children are telling us this, and therefore, our approach, our curriculum needs to be this. You know, the needs of our children are this, therefore, this is what we need to have in place. It certainly ties in, I think.
Absolutely. And also that whole understanding that your children, our children, are not the same as anyone else's children. They're not the same as the children we had last year. And it's that kind of real understanding that there isn't a one-size-fits-all scheme that can work for everybody and that we have to work with the children and everything that we know about them. I also think some of the work that schools have done looking at the curriculum and how that begins in early years and making sure there's that real connection between early years, Key Stage 1, and then beyond there, I think that's really, in some ways, opened eyes to the way that early years teaches and embeds all those really key important skills and understandings and how we need to build on that, not just finish it, close the door on it and then start again, but actually take from them all those skills that they have and then move on. So I think that's made a big difference too in many cases.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I think there is a growing awareness of what happens within the early years. And I think to a certain extent, looking at provision within Key Stage 1 is a knock-on effect of that, really. Yeah, no, absolutely. Okay, so lots of schools starting to look at continuous provision and think about how they might adopt it. So what I saw and what we were talking about is that we felt that it would be useful to people really to think about, well, actually, how do you start then? How do you get going with it? Because it's important to be prepared for what you're going to have in place. It sounds simple, doesn't it? That we're just going to adopt continuous provision. We're going to put in some areas of provision.
It'll be lovely.
What could be simpler than just adding in some areas of provision? And yet, actually, it's not simple at all, because you could easily get that wrong. You know, there's no point putting in provision if actually you're never going to get the chance to use it, or if the quality of what they're doing within those spaces isn't great, or if it's just a repeat of what they're doing within reception. You know, that's not great either. So yeah, we've got to get it right. So let's start with the reasons for then. If you're going to have continuous provision within your early years classroom, I think you need to have a really clear understanding of why you're doing it. So what are the reasons for doing it, first of all?
Well, your starting point is what we've already said. Your starting point is the children that you've got, everything that you need to understand about those children. And I think one of the things linked to that you're going to need in terms of preparation is a really solid understanding of child development. And I know from my own teaching experience that isn't necessarily something that every teacher has. And if you haven't got early years experience, then I think your absolute starting point would be get in there, look at how it's established, look at how adults interact, look at how competent and confident those children are in a good early years classroom, and then think about how you're going to build on that and how that's going to be able to continue. And it's everything we know about children, their development, the way that they learn most effectively, and therefore the way that we need to teach, the kinds of environments, our approaches that are going to be most effective for them. Because unfortunately, what often happens is that the approaches that we choose for our 5, 6 and 7 year olds are not necessarily the approaches that are going to be most effective for them. So that would be the starting point. What do you know about children? Find out absolutely everything that you can. Read, research, talk to your highly skilled colleagues in early years about child development, particularly if you don't have that experience.
Okay, so you've got your vision in terms of what you're wanting to do. You've got your research in terms of finding out about child development and how young children go about learning. You've also taken a trip down the corridor to your earliest classroom, and you've had a good look at actually what it is that they have there within, say, the reception classroom.
How it works.
Yeah, and how it works. And I don't think we do that enough, do we? Yeah, well, in my experience, I don't think people do that enough.
And it's difficult to find the time, isn't it?
Yeah.
No. I think you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, one of the things that I know we're thinking about is transition. And I think all too often transition becomes those couple of days in the summer term. The children come to our classroom, perhaps after assembly for a couple of hours. We meet with the teachers in the staff room, talk about data. But transition has to be a much, much longer process. And the transition has to be as much about us getting to know those children, the environment in which they work, how they learn, all of their skills. So it's our transition as much as it is the children's transition. Right. So I know one of the things that we were going to mention was the characteristics of effective learning.
Yes.
You know, understanding their role and how we can continue to strengthen those through Key Stage 1 and actually beyond Key Stage 1 as well.
Yes. So before you've even physically put extra, say, pieces of furniture or thought about areas of provision being just added into your provision, you've really got to do the groundwork. And the groundwork is about your understanding. It's about the conversations you have with your early years team. It's also, I think, and you mentioned this, is that sort of shared, I suppose, shared language between early years and year one. You know that. I think that's an interesting question to ask. If we're talking about adopting continuous provision, is there a shared understanding of what we mean by continuous provision in the early years? And is there a shared understanding of what we mean by continuous provision within year one? And also, in terms of shared language, those characteristics of effective learning, they will or certainly should be being used by your early years team. There is nothing about the different ages and stages within the characteristics of effective learning. You can carry that on. You can carry that great work on around the characteristics of effective learning into Key Stage 1 and well beyond. And so thinking about reasons for doing it, the characteristics come into that. So the reasons for doing it is that actually we want to develop those characteristics of effective learning, but also it comes into where to start. In terms of where to start, use the characteristics of effective learning, get to know what that is, what we mean by those characteristics. So what we mean by children developing thinking skills, developing that engagement in learning, that focus, that those self-regulation skills, etc., etc. Understand it so that when you do have your provision in place, you know what you're looking for in terms of quality of learning. I think that's key, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And another reason for having the continuous provision, is curriculum. And I think one of the difficulties, the barriers, can be the view that you've got all your teaching, you've got your curriculum to teach, all that stuff to get through, that can feel like a big weight on our shoulders. And then there's the sense that provision is a separate thing, that now we also have to find time to fit provision in. Whereas actually, when we look at it really carefully and we look at it in light of the opportunities, the resources and so on, it is our curriculum. You know, it's part of our long-term plan. The things that children are going to be doing there, the skills, the tools, the resources they're going to be using are part of our curriculum, and it's supporting us as much as it's supporting the children. So once you start to see it as another way of children embedding, revisiting, learning and making links in different contexts, then I think that's another, you know, really key reason. And the other thing, just to finish reasons, is that it's a complete joy teaching this way, that you see the children as individuals. Every single person that I've worked with who has introduced provision in Key Stage 1 talks about how much better they know their children, how they really understand their children and how their children come alive and they know them in such a broader, deeper way than they do in any other context. So that would also be, you know, it's so rewarding to work in this way. Hard work, but rewarding.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So we've got our reasons then for doing it, you know, why it's important to adopt continuous provision within your environment within Key Stage 1. We've got lots of good reasons for doing it. We've also got a starting point, and that is before you actually start, get your research done, really think about it, read up on it, create a vision, have the conversations, you know, have the discussions with your Key Stage 1 team, have the discussions with your early years team, have the discussions with your senior leadership team. You know, don't just kind of do it quietly by yourself. It doesn't tend to work if people try and keep it all to themselves. You've got to have the conversations, I think. Okay, so that's the first thing. So we've decided why we're doing it. We've decided also that having made that decision, we're going to really get the groundwork done. The next thing is then physically, we're going to introduce some areas of provision. So go on then, how do we start? How do we get going?
This is the bit where I think it's really easy to get carried away, isn't it? Because I know we want to do everything all at once. And I also know there's a lot of pressure from, I don't know, social media, for example, about what your classroom should look like and how beautiful it could look and, you know, all of those kinds of things. And I would say hold back on some of your enthusiasm, if you like, that desire to, right, I'm going to stay tonight. I'm going to completely change my classroom. When the children come in tomorrow, they won't have a clue where anything is. And it'll all go wrong. And I'll feel like, well, that didn't work. I'll pull back. I would start with one, maybe two areas, and think of the things that are fairly easy in terms of the resources. So it may be resources you already have in school, resources that are cheap. So something like the workshop, which is where you have your box modelling, your junk modelling resources, art resources, perhaps a maths area, but with a particular focus on, say, playing simple games that you've taught the children. So things that when they go into that area, they will already know what to do. And I would start with one, maybe two areas. Of course, what that will mean is that you are unlikely to be able to say to the whole class, off you go. And it may well be that you have to timetable it, you have to structure it, you decide when those children go in. But I think small steps will demonstrate the possibilities. And then once that's embedded, then you can think, okay, so now we've got that. What else can I have got this art area? Now I'll be brave and introduce a paint area. We'll look at how to use paint and how to access it ourselves and things. And what you will start to see really quickly is the engagement of the children, but you will also start to see the curriculum. You will see them using the skills that you've taught them, for example, to join in the work that they do there.
And I also think as well, so it's got to be manageable, as you say. We've got to think carefully about one, maybe two areas, and you will see a difference straight away, as you say. We've got to also make sure that what we're offering, as I mentioned earlier, is different to what we're offering within early years. As in, it might not look massively different, of course. All right. So say if it's a workshop area with the cutting, sticking, box modelling materials, it might not look completely different. And there is a degree of familiarity there, of course. But I think as adults within the room, we need to know the sorts of skills we're going to teach them within that provision. And we need to know the possibilities of that provision, of how we're going to move things forward. That it's not just about them accessing it, is it? It's not just about them coming and using it in between, in inverted commas, teaching time. It's about using that provision for teaching.
I think one of the things that if you start one or two areas and it was, say, a workshop area, and that means that not all your 30 children can go in there when they choose, you're deciding. I think in terms of you seeing the potential, if you've done a teaching input, say, and you've taught a particular join and you've done that whole class teaching, you've done the directed teaching, you've done group work and so on, and they've all practiced the skill and, you know, done all of those things. If then your starting point is to say, okay, we've all learned how to join in this way, or we've all learned how to make axles, for example, then you're able to use that workshop and say, right, I don't mind what you make. So you're giving the children that choice. They can follow their own interests. However, I want you to show me that you can join, or I want you to make something that's got an axle that you can move, so that it's directly linked. I think for teachers' confidence as well, it's that kind of structured. So it's that adult initiated. You can go in, they choose all of these. I don't mind whether it's a duck that moves, or it's a tank, or it's a, you know, whatever it is. As long as you're demonstrating that you've learned that skill, in some ways it allows us to hold on to it in a way that can increase our confidence. And that then is the starting point for kind of letting go, really, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And that confidence is key, isn't it?
It is. And I would say if you are partway through the year, the way that you're going to introduce provision is going to be different from the way that if you are in the mid, you know, you're thinking I'm going to do this from September, that you can be a lot, you can be perhaps more, you know, change an awful lot more, can't you, than if children leave today on a Friday, come back on a Monday, they need to come back to pretty much the same environment. But
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So people might introduce one or two areas as a starting point, think about how they're going to use those areas as a way of embedding learning over time, which is a great, actually, is something that Ofsted talk about a lot, you know, that the importance of revisiting learning, embedding learning. And so I think, you know, when we were talking about reasons for, it was something we didn't talk about, was that actually, you know, it does work in terms of inspections. You know, they're actually talking about embedding learning and how children are practicing and embedding skills. Continuous provision is a brilliant way of being able to do that, I think.
And children will be able to talk about it.
Yes, yeah. So we've got one or two areas in place. Okay, so that was our next stage. We've thought about adding materials and resources into it and what learning possibilities there are and how we're building on the learning from the early years onwards. Other key things, you know, I suppose challenges to a certain extent. You know, we've got to talk about the challenges here, haven't we? And I think timetable is a challenge when it comes to continuous provision, particularly in key stage one.
Yeah.
So timing and timetable, there's no magic wand, is there, really? But, you know, what sorts of key messages would you be sharing with people, or what key considerations would you recommend?
So in terms of timetable, because we know it's a massive issue, and often it's the first thing that comes up, the first thing to look at is kind of pushing as much as possible of the things that cannot be got rid of, your non-negotiables, your phonics, those kinds of things, the PE that you have to have at a set time. Push as much as possible to the outside edges. So get things done first thing in the morning or last thing in the day, those kinds of things. Give yourself as much space as possible, and then have conversations with the people you need to talk to about things like, how many assemblies do we actually need to go to every single week? You know, look at that. Is there some possibility of flexibility there? Perhaps, you know, can some of them take place in classrooms? Is there a need for an afternoon play every day? I know there's an impact then on staffing and all those kinds of things. And playtimes will vary. The need for playtimes will vary depending on the outdoor area that your children do or do not have access to. And then look at, can you avoid doing some of the chopping up that you're doing? Can you allow things to extend? Are you able to be flexible enough to think, do you know what, I need a bit more time. This session isn't going to finish at playtime. It's going to carry on afterwards. You know, those kinds of things. But timetables is very difficult for many people. What you're aiming for in the long run is flexibility and some level of autonomy so that you can make the decision to continue, to stop, to not start, to allow children to have more time in provision and so on. And what some schools do when this is very new to them, and it's not something that in the long run you would might want to look at. But they do think about, you know what, I'm going to have a session a day where they're in there, you know, where they go into provision and so on as a starting point. If that's the way to make it happen, then that's what you do in the first instance.
Yes. The other thing it made me think about when you were just talking is the sort of the link that I was making as you were mentioning about timetabling. I was thinking about what we mentioned earlier, which was the characteristics of effective learning. The characteristics of effective learning are, I would say, very closely linked to timings, in that if we're talking about children being engaged, if we're talking about them being focused and having their own ideas and carrying those ideas out and making links and making connections, that doesn't happen in a 10-minute burst of accessing provision. No, it doesn't happen in 10 minutes.
It doesn't.
You know, children take quite a while, really, to quite, you know, a good sort of 10 minutes usually to really start to become engaged in something. They don't tend to go straight to it and get to that high level of engagement. It usually takes the first 10 minutes at least to get to that. And then beyond that, if everything's working well, once you've got to that high level of engagement, you actually want to stay there. You know, you want to keep that because you're at what Ferrer-Lavers would say is that kind of optimum point for learning, of course. And so, yeah, I think when it's always a challenge, isn't it? It's a challenge in early years and it's a challenge in Key Stage 1 probably even more so. But I think one of the things that I always try to do is to try to give people the reasons for why, you know, for having the conversations or the reasons, the sorts of things that you can say if you're challenged in terms of the timetable. These are the sorts of things, these are the justifications for it. And I think one key justification for thinking about the timetable and to think about the timings of the day are very much the quality of the learning experience and the characteristics of effective learning. Yeah.
And you won't get the quality, will you, if they don't have the time? And there's often that it shouldn't be an equivalent of the kind of wet play time, have 10, 15 minutes playing with some nice things, and then we'll get back to the real stuff. You know, that it is the real stuff. And they, like, exactly like you said, they need time. They need extended periods of time. But what they also need is to be able to come back to something at the point at which they left it.
Yes.
And that's something that we need to bear in mind too, not breaking things up, not taking things home straight away, because, you know, okay, that's lovely, take it home, you know, those kinds of things. But actually come back, reflect, continue, develop. Otherwise, you'll see the same repetitive, low-level play, child-led learning, potentially all the way through the year. And we can't have that. There has to be, you know, there has to be progress.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a different mindset to a certain extent, isn't it? It's looking at not the product as such. So, which I think sometimes is what happens, you know, that we say, well, it's within year one or year two, we're making Tudor houses, for example. You know, that's what we're making, that's what we're building, and that's the product. But instead of that, thinking about the process and the quality of the process that goes into that, you know, is it about reflecting? Is it about changing your ideas? Is it about planning it properly? Is it about fine-tuning your skills or your thinking along the way to get to that point? And I think giving the children scope to work in a way which gives them time to do those things, I think values the process more than the product. It still values the product, but it values the process much more, I think.
But it's not, the product isn't everything, is it? And it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be every child has to make a Tudor house by Friday. You know, we're going to speed them up because, and you get that kind of production line, don't you? That kind of, we've got to get them all through whatever it is, whether it's, I don't know, planting sunflower seeds and they all get called out one at a time to do that. And there isn't room then to really look at the learning that's happening. And that's what we should be focusing on. But I completely get that it's an incredibly difficult thing to manage in Key Stage 1 because, you know, there are so many demands for many people.
Yeah, it's a big challenge. And also is the next thing that we're going to talk about, which is the role of the adult. Because what we're asking for here once we've introduced continuous provision is we're kind of expecting a different role from the adult, and that's a role that they might not have been in before, used before. So can you describe that to us? You know, what's the role of the adult when we're using continuous provision?
This is incredibly hard, incredibly hard. And it's linked to the demands, really. And practitioners in Key Stage 1 often end up in that really difficult situation of being told, okay, have a go with provision. You can have some provision. That's absolutely fine. But can I see 5 pieces of maths and 5 pieces of writing by the end of the week for every single child in their books, please? And it's that kind of, I mean, it literally happens. And then the pressure of schemes that demand that children work through a particular set of activities in a particular timescale, all of those things. And what can happen is that provision is set up, and it can be set up really well, really effectively, and really well resourced, and the children can really enjoy the time in there. But the teacher, or both adults, if there's more than one adult, are stuck to a teacher's table. And I often ask children when I go into classrooms, say, where do you learn in here? And it's really telling whether they tell me on Miss Smith's table over there, or whether they say, oh, well, in this area, in that area, and I like this. And it's that, isn't it? And it can be really hard for the adult to let themselves move away from that table. But if we don't, it's not going to work. The environment is not going to work without us, however well established, however well resourced it is. And we're going to miss an awful lot. And coming back to timetables, I found the one of the things that ironically really works well, if this is new to you in Key Stage 1, is to timetable your time in provision. And it sounds really silly and kind of counterintuitive, but actually to say, this amount of time every single day is my intervention time. It's my support time. It's my observation time. I'm doing intervention to support social skills or language or whatever it is. If you have a focus, then I found, and many people find, that they are more likely to do it. Whereas if you've got groups, and that those groups last till 10 to 12 when it's lunchtime, what you tend to do is expand those groups, let those expand to fill that entire time, and you stay at your table for longer. So that is one of the little tricks that can work, to put it down as a focus, to plan. And you can plan for, you know, supporting particular children, you know, if that helps, but to loosen that timetable, but now add something more to that timetable. We have to be in there.
Yes. No, but I do completely get that. I do completely get that. I do see that that works. I've had a similar conversation with people around using songs and rhymes and poems, that my concern is that if something isn't on the timetable, is that actually we fill the time. Like you've just said, we fill the time around it to the point that it gets squeezed out, because we're always adding more things into a timetable. And so if something isn't written on a timetable, it's gone. So, and the point I'm making is the sort of the incidental things that are not on the timetable, the sorts of things like singing a song with your children every day, or joining in with a rhyme or a poem or an action rhyme or whatever it might be. All of the things that we know are really important to do as a consistent everyday routine, if that's not on the timetable, eventually you'll forget to do it. Eventually it will get squeezed out because something else will be added in. And it's the same kind of thing I think you're saying there, is that actually timetable your time in continuous provision, because otherwise something else will be added in and you'll lose the opportunity to do it. So yeah, I think that's really good advice. I think that's really interesting. Really interesting.
The other thing that I was going to say is also timetable time, probably with the whole class or half if you've got TA support potentially, is to have time at the end of every day where you talk about what children have been doing in provision, review time we generally call it. But make sure that happens so that you know, the children know, that there is going to be time to have those conversations, not just about product, but about learning styles, how they approach things, all of those different things. So two extra things to timetable there.
Very good. It feels like we've covered a lot of ground then, Nova. It really does.
It does.
So we've talked about about reasons for continuous provision within Key Stage 1. You know, what's the argument for it? We've talked about where to get started, creating a vision for what you're aiming to do, do the research, get your thinking in place, go to the early years staff, go and have a look at what's in provision within early years. We've also talked about introducing one or two areas that are easy to resource and easy to set up and organise. So just to get started, to kind of dip your toe in, not to overstretch yourself, but to do one or two things well as a starting point and see the impact of that. Okay. Then we've talked about timetabling, which is always the challenge, and get and really sort of some key things and a few top tips to get you thinking around timetabling. Then we've talked about the role of the adult as well, what adults will need to be doing and how it might change or perhaps should change how you go about teaching and how you go about planning for learning within your classroom environment as a whole. So we've covered a lot of ground there. If people want to know more, there's a lot more out there, isn't there? There's a lot of information on the Early Excellence website. Do you want to just tell people about the different things that are on the website?
I think the starting point on the website, there's a tab, an ideas and inspiration tab. And under there are all sorts of things, most of which are free. So there's free training webinars. There's videos on how to set your classroom up. There's a webinar talking about curriculum links. There's podcasts. I know we've done one talking about routines in Key Stage 1. There's audit tools. You can download a Key Stage 1 audit. And there are also examples of provision planning. And that's really useful in terms of, I know Andy mentioned earlier, those conversations. We really need a shared conversation about what it is that we're aiming for, what it is we're doing, and also the reasons why, whether that's with your colleagues in Key Stage 1, subject leads who have never worked in Key Stage 1, who also need to understand why the approach might be changing. So that would be a really good starting point, as well as then doing your reading, looking for training opportunities, potentially talking to other schools that are already or are also looking at a different approach for Key Stage 1.
So yeah, there's lots of things out there. And so start on the website. If you go to earlyexcellence.com, go to that ideas and inspiration section, you'll find some planning guides for Key Stage 1 for continuous provision that will help you get started on thinking about the detail of what you'll need to know there. As Nova said, there's training videos, there's lots of different things there. Okay, so all the very best with all of this. There's a lot to think about there, but hopefully our conversation has helped you to kind of order it in your mind as to how to get started and how to get going with it. If you need to know more, then please do get in touch. So you can get in touch with me on my email, andy@earlyexcellence.com, or nova@earlyexcellence.com. You can get in touch with either of us via email. Or if you want to know more, follow either us or follow Early Excellence on any of the social media platforms, really. There's lots of different things coming up, including training specifically for Key Stage 1 teachers and practitioners. There's all sorts of different things coming up. Okay. Nova, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast this week. It's been great to chat with you. All the very best.
Thank you. Lovely to talk to you too.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
So there you have it. Thank you very much to Nova for joining us for this week's episode of the podcast. Really interesting conversations and discussions as well. And of course, if you want to know more about continuous provision in Key Stage 1, if you want to know more about how to implement it, how to plan for it, how to really get it right, then do get yourself along to one of those Key Stage 1 roadshow events. Definitely not to be missed. All right, that's about it for this week, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us, and we will see you next time. Mm-hmm.